Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of June, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets. Mike Zuzulo will be here from Atchison, Kansas, and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. We should be able to discuss the cash grain market, too, with Ben Pruce. He's out at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. And then we'll take up the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. He'll update Illinois, and then I'll take you through the rest of the Corn Belt in the Delta region as we make our way through the beginning of the growing season. Summer's not very far off, and it's a little warm out there now, but plenty of rain at this point. We'd like to see what those growing conditions are like, and you can stay with us to find out right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. Find us online, too, at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up on this Friday afternoon at the CME Group in Chicago, where corn was down 3 cents in the July contract, 360 and a half the settlement price. September, 2 3/4 lower, 367 and a half. And December, corn down 3 cents at $3.78. Next year's March, 2 3/4 lower, $3.89 the settlement price. In July of 2016, down 2 3/4 at $4.03. July soybeans down 8 3/4 today, a settlement price, $9.37 and 3/4. August 10 1/4 lower at 9.24 1/2, and November beans at 9 3/4 lower at 9.14 1/4. Let me repeat that, down 9 3/4 for the Novi new crop, down at 9.14 1/4 on a settlement price. January 9.21 3/4 down 9 1/4. Next year's July 9.35 9 1/2 lower. Bean meal futures off 80 cents at 304.90, and the bean oil for the day 25 cents higher at 34.78. Hard red in Kansas City's, or in Chicago, 6 cents lower at 5.35 1/4, and the soft red down 6 3/4 at 5.17 on this Friday afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the near by August 57 1/2 cents lower at $222. The September down 222 1/2 at 220.82 1/2. Actually, they're down just 22 1/2. And the lean hogs for the day were 37 1/2 cents lower at $81.82 1/2. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking the outside markets at this hour, the U.S. dollar is up 0.857 at 96.35. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 78 points lower at 17,847. And gold futures for the day down $5.50 at $1,169.75. The other outside markets, including crude oil, $1.06 higher at $59.06 a barrel. Ethanol futures down a half cent at $1.54.08. The gasoline on the RBOB up 4 8/10 of a cent at $2.02 8/10 of a cent. And heating oil or diesel fuel, that's 2 1/2 cents higher at $1.86 9/10 for the day. Natural gas, 4 cents lower at $2.58 6/10. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Isolated showers, some thunderstorms, partly sunny, high of 85, north-northwest winds at about 10 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation really low at just 20%. Tonight, cloudy, a low of 58, north-northeast winds. They'll gust to 16, and then tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 79. Saturday night, cloudy and 64. Sunday, a 40% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, 85 degrees. It will be breezy on Sunday with a south wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour. And Sunday evening, showers and thunderstorms more likely. Precipitation level at 70%, mostly cloudy, and a low of 68. Monday, chance of rainfall drops to 30%, partly sunny under 83 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy and 64. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's check now on this Friday afternoon, the 5th day of June, with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being
with us. Hey there, Todd. How are you today?
Oh, I'm really good. Was out and about in Champaign County checking out the crops. They look really good. Videotaping just a little bit, just to put it in our archives so that when I produce television later, I have something to put up from the June time frame. And frankly, the crops look really nice. In your area, what do you see?
Very soggy. Still very behind on bean planting. I think USDA's number this week for Kansas was 21%. For Missouri on bean planting, it was 23%. Both those states are typically about three-quarters of the way done come the end of May. So I think I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Corn is very up and down. You've got really nice-looking fields that got planted early and got up before the cooler, wetter weather came. That's probably about two-thirds of the crop, I would say. About one-third of the crop is super small, and there's quite a bit of yellow corn if it's not, at least getting close to calf high at this point, or in between ankle and calf high. It's starting to get some yellow, hadn't found the nitrogen yet.
So when you look forward to the crop progress condition report on Monday afternoon, what do you expect it will show?
Well, that's the tough part, because I think what you'll have is the dollar and the USDA report on Wednesday, along with the export inspections, all kind of working with the crop conditions and crop progress to give the trade a general mindset. I don't think that the crop conditions and crop progress numbers, unless they show substantial change, dramatic change, especially with the conditions for the corn and the soybeans, I doubt very seriously at this stage, given this week's close, that we'll do any better than maybe like a consolidation market, and that being kind of my rule of thumb heading into Wednesday's numbers. I'm not going to change any hedge levels at this point, it doesn't look like, for recommendations with clients. And I want to see if the USDA supply-demand numbers suggest supply falling faster than demand for a change, Todd. And I think this is what those crop conditions numbers may show that, but I don't know if the trade would really bite into that apple until they saw the numbers, which would just be a couple days away anyway.
What did you think of the close in the corn market for the week?
I tell you, the corn represented to me pretty much the whole commodity sector. We saw early on wheat catch a bid. I was very impressed with this, given the Greek default news, given the fact that the hard red wheat is starting to be combined and cut in parts of Texas right now. I was impressed with the fact that the soybeans were able to make new weekly highs, July above 950 for the first time since mid-May. And I think this helped spur the wheat to an additional increase in price and an early rally. But after the midday models came out, we saw the beans start to unwind and profit-taking take hold, and the corn and the wheat followed. And so when I looked at the wheat and the corn and the beans in their totality, I'd see corn the same way as I saw the other two, that we had a chance. I should say, all in all, we salvaged the technicals for the week. We needed to have a good week, and we did. We salvaged the technicals, but we could have revitalized and really awakened a sweeping, I want to say, mini bull, in other words, a technical move higher, because we would have been talking about, between you and I right now, trend lines being violated for the first time since May of last year on some of these crucial commodity index charts. But instead, we saw a commodity-wide sell-off, whether it was profit-taking, whatever you want to call it, and it just didn't get the job done technically, and corn's right there in the middle of it because it didn't break above its 10-week moving average, stayed below its 200-month moving average as well.
It did post an outside up week in the December contract. Am I not correct on that?
Yeah, it sure did, and I recognize that as a really nice feature. I would have liked to have seen more out of the spread, though. I would have liked to have seen the July D's corn spread get a little bit more active. It actually closed near the lows for the week, down around 18, 17 and a half, 18 cents. I'm actually recommending on the weekend copy as a preview to take a look at maybe buying into that spread here as a way to get into the long side of corn if we have any further weather problems, by the idea that the commercial and the end user would come in and start to bid up and need some more corn, especially if the report was friendly. He may move, she may move from a hand-to-mouth, just-in-time mindset to extended coverage, and I think the spread would represent that best, and that's why I would have liked to have seen more out of the spread. But you're right, the Dease corn, face value, nice week. It just could have done a lot more as a whole.
Will the WASD help out next week at all?
I think it could because, again, if you look at the supply-demand estimates from the news wires, the average estimate for the soybean 15-16 ending stocks is 487 million. USDA was at 500 last month. The high number is 569 million. For the corn, kind of the same thing. We're at right around 1.8, a little bit below that, versus 1.75 last month. High number on this estimate go around was over 2 billion, almost 2.05 billion bushels. So I think we're coming in high on the estimates compared to what I expected, Todd. And so it opens the door, I think, for the USDA to give us a little bit more friendly domestic number. The big question is, does the domestic number fall enough to offset a bigger South American supply? And that's what goes back to the whole idea of, in totality, when you look at the aggregate, is supply falling faster than demand on Wednesday afternoon?
So have we deviated yet from the 2010 analogous year?
No, we really haven't. And I think that the wheat, unfortunately, for it at the end of the week, did not get enough news to break the dollar down below 95.24 in the June index. That would have really helped us a lot as we get into this first week of June. And that's something that needs to continue to be in terms of a momentum. The dollar needs to continue to be pressured. But the Greek news of them pushing their bailout or pushing their payment out and putting them into default with the IMF for the first time since Bretton Woods was created after World War II, first developed country to ever do that, that's pretty dollar powerful. And the jobs numbers today were substantially strong, and that's pretty dollar powerful as well.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Anything on the livestock before I let you go?
I would say that the cattle market is trying to make up a decision on whether the cash and the retail featuring can hold it up technically or not. But I think the cattle market, hogs have already given way technically in my view, Todd. The cattle market is keeping the hogs afloat right now. So cattle next week and the weekly close probably going to drive the month and to drive the rest of the month and maybe even drive us into the Labor Day holiday. So that's going to be a big, big report on the WASD numbers as well for cattle.
You have a great weekend.
You too, sir.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Canada has filed a request with the World Trade Organization to slap as much as $2.4 billion in retaliatory tariffs on U.S. products over country of origin labels for meat. Canada's Minister for International Trade, Ed Fast, and Minister of Agriculture, Gary Ritz, issued a joint statement declaring Canada's request. Ritz says that the WTO has informed Canada that such retaliatory measures could be brought later this summer. Ritz also says a full repeal of COOL is the only option to avoid retaliation. A bill to repeal COOL could come to the floor of the House as early as next week. However, no similar bill so far has been drafted in the Senate. Meanwhile, Mexican officials are seeking potentially $653 million in retaliatory measures on U.S. products. In other WTO news, U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman says that the WTO's appellate body has ruled India is discriminating against U.S. poultry, eggs, and live pigs to protect its own domestic products. India has argued an outright ban on U.S. poultry, meat, eggs, and swine was needed to protect the country from avian influenza. Missing from the USTR's statement was any hint of retaliatory actions against India. The poultry industry maintains that U.S. farmers are missing out on at least $300 million in poultry meat exports to India because of the country's ban on U.S. products. India is not alone in declaring an outright ban on U.S. products. China and South Korea have also declared a ban on all poultry products from the U.S. The WTO panel found India breached its obligations under the WTO agreement, scientific standards, and risk assessments. OPEC ministers in Vienna today voted to maintain the organization's output target at 30 million barrels of oil a day, but Iran is signaling it wants a greater share of the market. Iranian oil sales have been crimped by sanctions imposed over its nuclear program. OPEC is already producing more than its target of 30 million barrels a day, even without the additional 1 million barrels a day Tehran hopes to produce within a year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ag economist Gary Schnuke is here to take up his latest offering on the Farm Doc Daily website. It is about crop insurance and how its ratios turned out last year. Thanks so much for taking the time with us, Gary. Tell me about the performance of crop insurance. First, how was it designed to perform?
All right, so when the crop insurance program was designed to perform, so it had a loss ratio of about one. So a loss ratio equals payments that are made divided by total premium. So over time, payments should about roughly equal total premium. So a loss ratio of one is about the target. And if we have loss ratios of less than one, it means that payments were less than premium. And if we have payments greater than premium, we will have loss ratios of greater than one.
In aggregate, how did crop insurance perform across all commodities last year?
Last year, the loss ratio was 0.9, and that's for the 2014 crop year. That is slightly above the average for what we've seen for the last 10 years. In the last 10 years, it's averaged 0.82. So 0.9 is above it, but not that much above it. And overall, you would say 2014 is an average year. We didn't have high, which happened in 2012 when we had a 1.62 loss ratio, and it wasn't one of the low years, which is 0.53, which happened in 2007.
How does it break out by commodity?
Commodities, corn had a loss ratio of 1.05, which was one of the higher ones for the top 10 crops. The highest was wheat with 1.113. The second highest was wheat, and the highest was rice with 1.49.
When you look at just the corn numbers, and we'll take up soybeans in a bit, by the way, that was fairly low.
Oh, for beans, soybeans, it was 0.54, which is very low. Soybeans for the last several years have had loss ratios consistently at that 0.5 range. It hasn't paid many payments compared to its premiums in the last 4 or 5 years.
How did the corn perform? It appears losses came in mostly Iowa and Minnesota.
That's correct. So we had very high loss ratios in the northern two-thirds of Iowa and Minnesota. And many of those counties in the northern two-thirds of Iowa and Minnesota had loss ratios above 2. So losses in those parts of the country were quite high. And the reason why they were high was because we had price declines on both corn and soybeans, and those areas last year did not have as good as yields as the rest of the corn belt. So they had high loss ratios. The remainder of the corn belt had very low loss ratios. Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, South Dakota, and even North Dakota had all had loss ratios below one, and most of those counties considerably below one, in the 0.33 range, in fact.
Overall, it performed as expected across the aggregate?
Yep, it was. Yes, 2014 wasn't, if you looked at it, it was a near average year. certain areas had high losses, which would be the Iowa and Minnesota, as well as western Oklahoma and northwest Texas, and that's primarily a wheat losses on wheat in those areas, but the rest of the country had loss ratios below one.
Any areas or crops that appear abnormal at this point?
At this point, no. Not for 2014. It's about what you would expect given the yield performance and the price performance that we did see.
Thank you so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the FarmDoc Daily website. A new article is posted each and every Tuesday. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Normally, we talk with Ben Pruce out of the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility. He tells me by text he's made his way to Omaha, Nebraska, and not available this afternoon. Fortunately, Amy Sage is with us from right here at the Anderson's facility in Champaign County. Amy, thanks for filling in on short notice. I do appreciate
that. No problem.
Hey, you wrote a really nice article earlier in the week that I retweeted. If people want to follow you on Twitter, how do they do that?
Actually, my handle is AMURR85, or you can just find me under my name, Amy Sage.
Oh, excellent. Great. So what did you write about?
Really just comparing action that needs to be taken between old crop corn and new crop corn. As a whole, I guess the opinion of the company and mine as well is that two different approaches here at this point in time probably need to be taken advantage of these small rallies to help get rid of some of your old crop if you're sitting on anything more than gambling stocks. Concern is that even on these bounces, since there is so much left to be sold by the farmer, whether it be actually on the farm or in commercial hands and DP basis, what have you, that's probably going to limit any upside to an extent that we see. Whereas new corn, we still have a long ways to go before this crop is made. The market has been oversold and funds have been short. So any type of positive information, like we saw this week with the cold weather affecting wheat and the dollar being hit, we've been able to take advantage of that with fund short liquidation.
All right. I know you didn't write about it. Do you have a similar thought process for soybeans?
Yeah, somewhat similar. Beans were a little bit more concerned about new crop and at least trying to look at locking in some floors if we can see some higher levels here on the November. Reason being, we think there probably is a little bit more bean acreage out there than what we maybe saw on the March 30th report. So we'll find that out June 30th when we get the final planted acreage. But do you think that there, obviously we know there were more beans and corn or a shift to bean acres this year than what we saw out of corn. So want to be paying close attention to that and taking advantage, particularly if we can get a $9 floor in.
And your spot bid months for the day.
Yes, 352 cash corn, 943 cash soybeans, and 507 June and July wheat.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Amy Sage is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
It's Feast Day of St. Boniface, patron saint of brewers. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, the first vegetarian community was established in Kansas by Henry Club, the leading advocate of vegetarianism in the U.S. Club wrote that his colony would preserve the principles of vegetarianism and would induce thousands of wavering citizens to, quote, adopt a system of diet so highly conducive to their happiness and well-being. The dream colony was named Octagon City. In 1876, foil-wrapped bananas were sold for a dime at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. Bananas became a popular treat for the first time in the U.S. when word spread about how delicious they were. In 1877, The U.S. Congress taxed oleomargarine to protect the dairy industry. The Margarine Act of 1886 was in response to a judicial ruling saying oleomargarine could not be banned from import or production. And in 1883, James and William Horlick developed the process to dehydrate milk, and they received a patent for it. They called the new powder malted milk. The original idea was to produce a milk product for babies and invalids that could be shipped without spoiling. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. Now, let's update the agricultural weather forecast for the state of Illinois with climatologist Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey, Prairie Research Institute.
After our last report, additional rain fell over the last weekend in May. The statewide average rainfall finished at 5.6 inches, which is 1 inch above average, and the 22nd wettest May on record. Some of the heaviest amounts were seen in the northwestern part of the state and just southeast of St. Louis. The highest reported monthly rainfall total was 9.41 inches at Red Bud. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday will be in the range of the mid-70s in the north to the low 80s in the south. Sunday will be a little warmer with lows near 80 in the north and the upper 80s in the south. That will set the tone for the week. Highs will be in the low 80s in the north and in the mid to upper 80s in central and southern Illinois. Overnight lows will range from the low to mid 60s in the north to the mid to upper 60s in the south. There is a chance of rain starting in northern Illinois on Sunday morning and moving through the state on Sunday afternoon and Monday morning. Potential rainfall totals are in the 1 to 1.5-inch range. Looking at the 6 to 10-day forecast that covers next weekend, temperatures and precipitation are expected to be above average. The forecast for the week after that is for near-average temperatures across Illinois. Rainfall is split with the western half expected to be average and the eastern half expected to be above average. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his Friday update of the weather forecast for the state of Illinois. You can find all of our weather programming on our website at willag.org. 5 meteorologists are there each and every week. Updated twice daily weather from Illinois Public Media at willag.org. We cover the planet and the growing region. Speaking of which, let's take a look around the rest of the Midwest. In Iowa, Des Moines' forecast for the weekend tells me that they'll have sunny skies tomorrow and 78 degrees and then a 35% chance of rainfall on Sunday. They'll drop just to a low of 63. Start the work week on Monday with sunny skies and maybe some thunderstorms as they make their way through Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. Omaha, Nebraska on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday also looking for some rainfall, but those chances are really pretty slim in that 20 to 15% range. However, they also have a chance of rainfall on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. They'll go to highs in the low 80s and lows in the upper 60s. In the Delta region, Memphis, Tennessee over the weekend should maybe see a shower too. Not much in the rainfall there as well. They'll be a little warmer than the rest of us. That's not unusual. Nearly 90 degrees over the weekend, and then they'll cool down as just a bit as they make their way through the week into the mid-80s for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They have a 45 to 35% chance of rainfall each of those days. Lows in the Memphis area in the 70-degree mark. That's a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions in the United States for the Corn Belt and the Delta. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.